Welcome to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening, a person who did a great eight-day cleanse, but then, well, we'll talk about that later. But and someone who's glad that the Center for Food as Medicine and Hunter College Food just released a new report called Food as Medicine Report. And we're going to be talking about this report as well as food as food as medicine with a local author, Jenny Bream. Hi, welcome to Food Freedom Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you've been at this food as medicine for a long time. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I actually started off in the food industry as a chef. I began by just locally working in restaurants and shortly thereafter connected with my best friend and housemate who was working front of the house, and we put together a little catering business that evolved into a local food restaurant in the early 90s. So before the whole concept of farm to table was really a thing, we were doing that because it made sense to us, because where else are you going to source your food but from local suppliers who you know and trust? So I was doing the food industry. I was developing, you know, recipes. We were having local events and meeting local producers and farmers. And I was teaching classes, and I kind of discovered that people, although they knew that food was important, didn't really understand where to find it, what to do with it, or really how connected it was to their health. So that led me to a huge pivot. And in 2009, I was fortunate enough to receive a Bush Fellowship to focus on public health and nutrition. So I got a master's degree in public health nutrition and went down a whole different path of making this connection between food and human and planetary health.
And so people can go to your website, transformingthetable.com, and you have a lot of recipes and different type of work that you do on that website.
Right. And I'm working on making it a little bit more connected to the current work that I'm doing, you know, more around teaching and connecting local communities with nutrition education, culinary education, health and wellness, and you know, all of those things being together in one place.
And you co-teach a class for continuing medical education, Food Matters for Health Professionals. So
right.
Talk about that course a bit.
So I have an amazing colleague who's an integrative doctor named Dr. Kate Shafto, and we met about 8 years ago because she was also seeking somebody who cared about the relationship between food and health. And we developed a class at the time that was just a pilot for medical students. And we actually hosted it at the Good Acre, which at the time was brand new. It was the first class that ever happened there.
Ooh.
And we invited all these medical students to learn a little bit more about the food system and how food and the food system was influencing people's health. And we cooked, which was at the time kind of like, why are you doing that? People didn't really understand what the point of cooking with medical students was. So except for Mary Jo Kreitzer, who is the director of the Center for Spirituality and Healing, who said, hey, that makes a lot of sense. Why don't we make it live here at the center? And from then on, Dr. Shafto and I started offering that class for all health professional students. So it's an interprofessional class. Actually, we just published a paper on this about 6 months ago, mm-hmm. Where we cook and we also have didactic information, and we really talk about the relationship between food and the food system and human and planetary health and the role of health professionals in making those connections.
Let's talk on planetary health, because we're just, I mean, inundated in so mm-hmm. many ways with a sad story in terms of planetary health. But the planetary health and the human health are deeply linked.
Deeply connected. And I mean, to put it really simply, what's good for the planet is good for humans and vice versa. So the more that we do to change the way that we're growing and producing food and processing food, the more it's negatively impacting human health, right? We see that with what we now call ultra-processed foods. So the further away from their original form foods get, the more our body doesn't really understand or know how to process those foods, and the more damage it's doing. And we're seeing that with all kinds of health conditions that are just exploding. So metabolic conditions that are really tied to what we put in our bodies.
So what are some of those conditions?
So things like diabetes, like heart disease, certainly gut problems, mental health issues, all of these things are connected. And food is really one of the primary things that connects them.
And you're going to be starting a new teaching clinic at the Red Leaf Center for Family Wellbeing.
So it's a teaching kitchen. I'm not a clinician, but the Red Leaf Center for Family Wellbeing is housed in Hennepin Healthcare in the hospital. And the vision behind it was to have whole person health happening in that facility. So in addition to outpatient mental health programming, they built a teaching kitchen. And it hasn't really been fully utilized yet. So I'm really excited to go in there and start developing programming and training. And that programming will be for patients, but also for practitioners, for interns, for residents, for community members. So there's so much opportunity and potential for what can happen in that kitchen.
So tell us some recipes that you might make if people are looking for recipes. And what type of approach to food would you recommend?
That's a really good question, and it's something obviously I think about all the time. I have recipes. Obviously, I've written a cookbook, and I love writing recipes, and I think they're really a great way for people to practice cooking. But I'm even more excited about the idea of just teaching people basic formulas and skills and templates so that they can produce whatever they want, given that they have the basic ingredients to do that. So a lot of sauces, a lot of basic uses for things like eggs, frittatas, things with whole grains like a stir fry or a whole grain salad, or legumes, hugely, hugely nutritious, affordable, you know, culturally meaningful food. So what can you do with legumes? So, and again, anything from, you know, what we probably associate with legumes, like things like tacos or burritos, but also salads and, you know, stir fries again and soups. So I'm less focused on a lot of different kinds of recipes and more focused on giving skills and sort of familiarity and introducing people to ingredients and to concepts that they can then execute in their own space.
So is there one way of eating that's right for everybody on this planet?
Obviously not. I think that a lot of the nutrition world or, I don't know, TikTokers and bloggers would have you think that there's one really amazing answer to all the issues or questions or concerns people have around diet and nutrition. Unfortunately, it's obviously much more complicated than that. But what I can say pretty consistently is that the more you're eating foods that are in the form that they come in naturally, so whole foods, foods that don't have ingredient labels, foods that are not processed or highly processed. Obviously, processing, you pick a plant and you cut a potato and you're processing it. So the language around nutrition is also very complicated, but not highly processed or ultra-processed as much as is possible. We live in a food system where it's really difficult to access those foods. It's more expensive to access those foods. So there's a lot of things working against our making those choices, but as much as possible, getting back to the basics. And, you know, unfortunately, I think moving further away from meat and animal proteins is better for us and the planet. It's also more affordable. So focusing on some of these other things that we're going to get a lot more bang for our buck from. So there's a lot of different things that you can say and think about when you ask about, you know, what is the ideal diet for people. It depends on who you are, where you live, you know, what resources you have, and what skills you have.
Well, I know one thing with that, when I was doing the cleanse, the 8-day cleanse, they recommended a lot of ginger. And so just getting that fresh ginger, which is super cheap. I mean, I am amazed at how cheap ginger is.
And we can even grow it. It's even grown in Minnesota now.
It is. Okay. I have some wild ginger. I've got to figure out. I've never harvested that. But to know how to take some fresh ginger, cut it up, and put it in a pot with a little bit of oil and some garlic and your favorite seasonings. Yeah. And then add legumes and whatever you like. So what kind of things do you like to do?
Well, I do a lot of that kind of thing where I'm just sautéing a bunch of vegetables or roasting a bunch of vegetables and then making a delicious sauce. And ginger, you know, is an interesting example because culturally around the world, that's a very commonly used ingredient that also happens to have a lot of medicinal and healing properties. So that's, you know, it's not new to many people. But yeah, I do that too. I'll heat up olive oil and saute a bunch of vegetables and make a, you know, a sauce with tahini and maple syrup or, you know, olive oil and orange juice and fresh herbs, you know, depending again on the season and what I have. And just make, you know, mix it all together and make it delicious, throw in some good whole grains or some, you know, whole grain pasta or whatever. It's really just a matter of making stuff taste good.
And you do have some recipes on your website. And again, what's the name of your website?
Transformingthetable.com.
Transformingthetable.com. And like so my to-go was garlic and onions. He was just started everything with garlic and onions. But mm-hmm. I was in this report, it actually said that there have been artistic renderings of garlic that goes back over 3,700 BCE. So we've been humans have been having this relationship with garlic for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And so we're going to take a break. We're talking with Jenny Breen. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the new Food as Medicine report from the Center for Food as Medicine and Hunter College. So we'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Food Freedom Radio. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and joining me in studio is Jenny Breen. And we're talking about a new report, a Food as Medicine report, and this is from the Center for Food as Medicine and Hunter College. And as on break, you're saying there really is a lot of new information coming out.
Absolutely. There are probably on a weekly basis a report on food as medicine in some form crosses my desk. So it's exciting that there's a lot of research. It's also in some ways ironic because this is not really a new concept, but thankfully it's getting some attention.
And so in this report it says that diet has the potential to cause disease, but it can also restore health.
Mm-hmm. And that is a really, really important. So it can prevent disease, but it can also bring you back to health when you are dealing with different kinds of health issues. And I think that's a really important thing for people to know. So, you know, as my colleague Dr. Shafto likes to say, your genetics is not your destiny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we kind of got the message it was genetics, but nutrition plays a big part.
Huge part. Like you said, again, in keeping us healthy, but also in returning us to health.
So I'm just going to cite some of the statistics in this report. The American Heart Association published a few years ago something that said if we could reduce sugar content, actually achieve the objectives of the Sugar and Salt Reduction Initiative in 2018, that would save 500,000 deaths and reduce diabetes by over $750,000 and save $160 billion in healthcare cost.
Yeah. So sugar is a pretty big component of our health problems. And sugar is sneaky because we're not just talking about the sugar that, you know, is a white powder that we're all familiar with. It's the stuff that's hidden in food, in so many foods that we would never even think to consider that sugar was in, and also in the highly refined carbohydrates. And that's something that is ubiquitous in our food system. It is available in every form, in every way, in every place. And for a lot of people, they aren't necessarily making that association. So, you know, the pastries, the baked goods, the packaged foods, and again, hidden in things like sauces and salad dressings and cereals and all of that. It's not to say that that is the only thing or that that is the one thing, but it is a significant part of the health issues that people are dealing with today. And just a fascinating thing that we like to teach about when we teach about this topic is that I don't know if you remember the low-fat era. I'm sure
mm-hmm.
you do,
yeah.
Where we all grew up thinking that fat was what made you fat. And so mm-hmm. the the fat industry was able to, this came out recently in a report in JAMA, the fat industry was able to pay off some researchers to actually say that it was, the sugar industry paid off researchers to say that fat was what was making everybody sick when they understood that it was actually sugar. And so for many years, we went down that rabbit hole of low-fat foods, which had more sugar in them. So it was sort of a double impact.
And people thought it was really healthy food. It's, oh, look at this. It's low fat, but it's a lot of sugar. Right. When all the experts knew that it was really the sugar was causing the problem. And I'm just going to say it out right now. And the one thing, I actually saw the movie Willy Wonka. I'm going to play a little bit more of that Imagination song. Because in Willy Wonka, it's like the cartel, the chocolate cartel. And actually, it's got some really good myths in there, I think. But where am I going with this? But it's crazy that Americans eat too much sugar, right? And that's costing us in healthcare dollars and in quality of life. We're just eating and consuming way too much sugar.
Yeah, and it goes back to that food system that I was talking about earlier. So it's what's available, it's what's cheap, it's what our palates have now gotten used to. And so it's really hard for many people to move away from that for all kinds of reasons. So we have, you know, it isn't just the experts, it isn't just the sugar industry, it isn't just the government, it's sort of everybody together is responsible, and everybody together really needs to do what they can. I think policy is a huge part of this. I think giving people the resources to access healthy food is critical, making it available to people, making it affordable to people. Not punishing people for not having the ability to access those things.
Right, that shame. And I want to get into that later. But here's another statistic from the study. In August 2021, it was published in Nature Food. Researchers reported that substituting 10% of the beef and processed meat in a patient's diet for fruit, vegetables, legumes, nuts, and select seafood could increase their lifespan by 48 minutes per person per day.
Yeah, and again, it's you know, it's hard to get so specific with the numbers and that kind of thing. But what we do know, as I was saying earlier, less meat, more whole foods, focusing really heavily on the vegetables and fruits and whole grains and legumes, and that alone, those kinds of changes have significant impact for people, not only in their health and disease state, but how they feel and function on a daily basis, and their mental health. So it's, again, it's all connected. And my hope is always that I can engage somebody in sort of exploring and making changes in their diet long enough that they start to feel those effects so that then they're motivated to keep doing it. Because I think you do feel them. A lot of people, I used to say this a lot, don't realize how bad they feel until they start feeling better. And then they think, oh, I didn't have to feel that way.
Yeah, I did the 8-day cleanse, and I must admit, I felt great during it. I was surprised. It wasn't hard to do, and I was kind of expecting it to be. And now that I've kind of gone back, I don't feel as good. So I'm going to have to really.
It's hard. I mean, and I think again, we all have busy lives. We all have a lot of responsibilities. It's hard sometimes to just say, I'm going to focus on how I feel and pay attention to that. I think there are some really great tools. We give our students some really great tools to use with their patients or their clients and themselves to really just sort of tune into how they're feeling and what might be connected to how they're feeling. I think a lot of us don't always make that connection between what we're putting in our bodies and how we feel, whether it's, you know, sore joints or just feeling tired. You know, scrolling through Instagram or TikTok, there's a lot of people out there trying to tell you exactly what you should take in order to address those things. But I feel pretty strongly that just starting with what you eat is the most powerful place.
So in this report, they start with the history of food as medicine. It was actually quite fascinating. I was thinking about, I grew up with the old wives' tale, and, you know, you do ginger and garlic and hot pepper when you got a cold. But a lot of this history of food as medicine is really quite deep and rich.
Yeah, and, you know, we were talking about this also at break, but traditional diets and traditional cultural foods have lasted for generations for a reason, right? And a lot of that isn't, it's not because somebody sat down and said, oh, I know this and this is going to make me feel this way or it's going to prevent this disease. But these practices and these traditions evolved because they worked and they sustained people and they kept people healthy or, you know, reversed certain conditions. And so we need to really give attention and credence to those traditional foods and combinations of foods that have been around for so long for a reason.
Right. And so we can think of Chinese medicine.
Yeah. And I have no expertise in Chinese medicine, only to say that it is a tradition that's been around for a long time. It takes into account the digestive system. It takes into account the, you know, the blood flow and the meridians in the body and specific foods that have specific roles in your diet. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to learn from that.
A lot to learn. So we're talking about food as medicine with Jenny Breen, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund. Thanks for listening. Chef, culinary nutritionist, and an educator about food as medicine. And so the Center for Food as Medicine and Hunter College released a report recently about food as medicine. And one of the, they spent about 20, 30 pages just talking about the history of food as medicine. So the Chinese and let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, though that may actually have not been written by him and they couldn't find it. But anyhow, that's a side story. But they also point to the food as medicine in various Native American traditions. So you want to talk a little bit about that? I mean,
well, again, as I'm no expert in Chinese medicine, I'm not an expert in Native American traditions or medicines. But again, I would just point to traditional foods and traditional diets and traditions across cultures and how they are generally very sustaining in terms of human health over the generations, and that's why they still exist. Specifically with Native American traditions, you know, unfortunately, we came and wiped out a lot of the ability or the accessibility to some of those foods and plants.
Yeah, the murder of the buffalo was a murder. It was war.
Using absolutely.
Food as a weapon.
And you know, when you look at the commodities that Indians were forced to use and, you know, instead of their traditional foods, you also saw a lot of disease come from that. So there's, and we can find examples like this across the world, right, where traditional communities or cultures had their traditional foods taken away. And as a result, there was disease and sickness that they had never seen before. So there's an obvious and very historical connection between indigenous peoples, the regional and local foods and plants that they utilize, and their health.
But a diet that consists of corn, beans, squash, roots crops are so important, native berries, so awesome, wild rice, fruits, nuts, seeds, and game, free-range game. And that's balanced and whole foods, and that's better for human bodies.
Absolutely. And that wouldn't make sense for indigenous people in other parts of the world where wild rice or wild game maybe wasn't there. So I think it's always important for us when we talk about traditional diets. You know, I'm sure people have heard the Mediterranean diet referenced as something we should all be following. And while it's true that the principles of a Mediterranean diet, right, foods that are regional to where you are, whole foods, very vegetable focused, not a lot of meat on the plate, all of those things make a lot of sense. But the specific foods of a Mediterranean diet don't make sense necessarily for us in Minnesota in December to be eating. So we have to understand that these are concepts and principles, and it's not the specific ingredients necessarily.
I don't know if I want to say it, but I've been reading this really funky book written in 1580 called Magic, and it's by Giordano Bruno. But he starts that book saying there are as many definitions for magic as there are mages. Mm-hmm. And the same is true with our diet. I mean, it's all so complex and so individualized. So finding our own way to eat, and part of that is to learn to listen to the body.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a really important sort of foundational thing that we teach for our practitioners, for, you know, doctors and nurses and pharmacists, and also for their potential patients or clients. I always say that babies are born knowing how to listen to their bodies, right? Little kids, if you had kids or you know kids and you watch them eat, they are very intuitive with their eating, right? They just, they kind of know what they want, and then they know when they're done. And there's no external sort of voice telling them the way they should be doing that. And we, as a society, we kind of train people out of that. And so a lot of what taking care of yourself and feeding yourself well is really learning how to listen to your body, because we are all different. And again, there are some general principles that make a lot of sense, right? Eating foods that are very natural in their form, that haven't been highly processed or changed that dramatically. And that, of course, involves cooking and knowing some cooking skills, which is a big part of what I do. But also just understanding, like, what does it mean when I'm hungry? What am I hungry for? What does it mean to be satisfied and to have enough? And, you know, what are the different reasons that we eat? We have a lot of different reasons that we eat. It's not always because we're physically hungry, and that's okay. But understanding that is part of learning, you know, again, how to listen to your body and what works.
And so food is medicine in modern society. And so one thing is, when AIDS was breaking out, the idea of actually delivering people who are patients food really emerged, and on a policy level.
I didn't realize that was the history of that. We are seeing that happening. You know, the term VeggieRx is kind of a newer, more common term for this, where people are getting prescriptions for food, or they are getting food deliveries, which is a really exciting thing to see. I still feel like it's a little bit downstream from where it could be. I think what we really need to do is make sure that people have access to healthy food and the ability to prepare it before they get sick, so they don't end up at the doctor. But it's a good start for now. I'm actually involved in a really awesome local program with M Health Fairview and Appetite for Change and the Sana Foundation. We've been collaborating now for 4 years on a food box. It's called I can't even remember now what it's called.
That's all right.
Blanking on that, but I'll get back to you. But we are working with the Good Acre to source food from local producers, many of whom are potentially also patients at M Health Fairview, or sadly may not have the resources to feed themselves with a lot of these whole foods. So we're getting produce and meat and grains, and then we are also working with the food group to build pantry items, and we're sending folks meal boxes with enough food to prepare two meals with recipes and other information. I do Facebook Live sort of cooking demonstrations throughout the spring and summer and fall when we send them, and they're going out to over 800 people every week.
That's so awesome. And I know there's a lot of this going around the country.
Yeah.
And I know with that Fresh RX, it mentioned in the report that the food is medicine, but that they were able to reduce AC1 levels 1 to 2% with a group of people. And that equated to saving $16,000 to $24,000 in healthcare cost.
Yeah.
So this idea of food as medicine and offering food can actually not cost the system, but save the system money.
Absolutely. It's an investment in the long-term health and therefore lowering healthcare costs. I think that that's a really important message. I like to say you're going to pay for it. You can pay for it now or you can pay for it later, but you don't get out of paying. And so you can either pay now, invest up front in, you know, healthy food and a healthy food system, or you can pay later in all the healthcare costs.
Now, I know this is super complex, and I don't know if it can happen, how fast it can happen, but I just, like we had universal school lunches, I mean, we need to have healthy food universally accessible
yeah.
to all of us
yeah.
at that middle shelf aisle, and it just makes so much sense. And we're spending so much money as a nation on healthcare costs and all the other problems with having an unhealthy food system. And if we move to a healthy food system, the benefits are so are cascading.
They are, and they're both human and environmentally impactful. It's a policy issue as much as anything, and there are folks doing incredible work all over the country, all over the world, really, to change the policies that make the food industry so powerful and the food that they sell so damaging. And we need to call them out, and we need to talk about who has access and why and what that means. But yes, it is absolutely a food system that is not keeping us healthy.
That's not the point of the food system. I mean, the point of the food system, the intention of the food system is not how do we provide healthy people in a nice, sustainable way, food and nutrition. The intention of the food system is how do I make a buck?
Well, I would say that the food system is simply the system in which food exists and gets to us. The food industry has a significant amount of control over the food system, and so it's not the intention of the food industry. There's a small amount of people making a lot of money off of the damaging food that people are eating. And so I would say we need to hold them accountable. We need to change their ability to do what they're doing. And meanwhile, we also have to change policies and systems that make food, the food that we think people should be eating, available and affordable.
And that's why this idea of food as medicine becoming almost mainstreaming it. Mm-hmm. Would you say it's becoming mainstream?
I think it's getting there. And I think what's good about that is that the health professions, our doctors and nurses and pharmacists have to become involved in the conversation. And they have a lot of power. And that's something that we tell our students is you are going to have a platform that a lot of people won't have. And so you need to use it to influence these upstream powers.
Right. And so in the world, there's almost a global consensus as to what makes up a healthy diet. And of course, it's all regionally based, but this is the World Health Organization's healthy diet, fruit, vegetables, legumes, nuts, whole grains.
Yeah.
And less than 10% of total energy intake from free sugars. And less than 30% of total energy take from fat, and less than 5 grams of salt per day.
Yeah, I get a little hesitant to give numbers,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because most of us don't live that way. And so rather than stressing people out by thinking they have to measure everything and count everything, which we know hasn't worked, it's really never worked. I think, again, giving people skills and literacy to know where to find good food and what to do with it when they find it and how to afford it and how to plan is a lot more practical.
Mm-hmm. And yet, I mean, I remember that there were times when because of the salt, then some salt got taken out of soups and those soups didn't sell because the human animal kind of likes sugar, salt, and fat, right?
Oh, we love it. We're very naturally attuned to it. And there are fantastic natural sources of it. And also, when we are preparing our own food, it's almost impossible for us to overconsume any of those things, right? Because our bodies just won't absorb it. If we oversalt something, we won't like how it tastes. But because of, the food industry and ultra-processed foods, there's a great new book out by a doctor in England called Ultra-Processed People, in which he really talks about the effects of ultra-processed food and even where it came from. So as long as we're letting somebody else formulate what's in our food, we really have no control.
And yet I know most of us now are spending more money eating out at restaurants than we are at the grocery stores.
Yeah, I don't know the statistics, but I know that that's definitely a trend. And so part of my crusade, my pursuit, is to make cooking delicious food at home fun and so satisfying and so engaging and so easy that you don't feel the need to spend so much money going out.
And one of those things they mentioned in that report that I found, there's like this cheeseburger bill, they nicknamed it. But the whole idea of it's not the interest, it's the fault of these individuals. These individuals are just making bad choices and they're bad people. And we got to turn that around because it is structural problems that we're facing. It's not weak people. It's not, there's just way too much blame and shame of individuals. And that's not healthy.
Absolutely. And thankfully, that's really shifting in the sort of educating of future health professionals. I think that people are really realizing that that isn't the case. But yes, as a society, we still do a lot of that. And we have to, I think it's really empowering to individuals who are struggling with their health to know that it isn't their fault.
So we're talking with Jenny Breen. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it.
Change the food system?
There
nothing to it? Absolutely nothing to it? Right. So I'm Laura Headline. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio. And with us is chef, culinary nutritionist, and educator, Jenny Breen. Can we change the food system?
Absolutely. Otherwise, I've wasted the last 25 years of my life trying. it's changing. It's changing. I believe that. I think there's an incredible energy and momentum. I think, the White House Conference on Hunger and Nutrition happened for the first time in 50 years. So even at that level, there's a conversation happening. I think we have to start small and we have to just connect with people that are, are asking for change or looking for change, and the people who have the power to make that change. I mean, I think we all do on some level, but we need to talk about it. We need to hold people accountable. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah, and so if anyone wants to read this report, it's at foodmedcenter.org, and it's with the Center for Food and Medicine and Hunter College, and they concluded with several recommendations, but basically, we've got to start sharing information about how food is so vital and get that good research and come together on something that is our health and well-being and not seeing our health and well-being just under the lens of who's making money.
Well, and we also have to see how everything is connected. So our health is connected with planetary health. It's connected with community health. It's connected with, sustainability and I don't think we can have one without the other. And I think that I know with young people, I teach at the university, and so I work with a lot of young folks for whom the future of the planet and climate is really, really important. And when you start showing how that's connected to food and human health, I think that makes it more relevant to them. So helping people understand how we're all connected to this topic. I mean, food is something none of us can live without.
Yeah, we all need to eat. And what popped my mind now is I've talked to several regenerative farmers that don't really have a place to sell their grain. They're doing the cover cropping. But when it comes to selling their barley, there's just not the infrastructure available for that.
Yeah, I think we need to get chefs a little more plugged into that. I think that oftentimes they think, well, I'm buying grass-fed meat, so I'm doing my part. And I think we have to go further than that. And we really have to use the whole plant from all the different seasons. And so those cover crops are edible. There are some chefs doing that, but I think we need to do more of that. We also have to ideally support people who are growing food that, again, is nourishing us and the planet.
Right. And so supporting that ecosystem, because the farmers that are doing the right thing aren't really getting rewarded
Yeah, I think people think that I can't afford to buy, a lot of folks would say, organic food. I'm not necessarily saying organic food is healthier, but I can't afford to buy healthy food. And again, I think we need to kind of reframe what we're spending our money on, what we're prioritizing, and what the longer term impacts are, and also what that looks like if we lose all of our small local farmers in terms of, again, planetary health and the food system.
Yeah, and we just went to because it is really hard. We've just lost a lot of dairy farmers in Minnesota, and so while there are this wonderful energy growing, it seems like at the same time there's more awareness of food as medicine and people want to eat healthy, and yet the small farmers are actually having a harder time.
Yeah, I think some. I mean, I think there's, again, local movements like, you know, even just our Minnesota Farmers Market Association is doing incredible work to highlight and promote and support small farmers and make that food accessible. You know, we have our SNAP Market Bucks program, so folks who are on SNAP can go to a farmers market and triple their money. So we're doing what we can, I think, locally, and I think, again, policy needs to get involved, and we need to hold the industry accountable for the negative impacts that they're having.
Yeah, and it is daunting, but at the same time, that's why I'm kind of like this Willy Wonka, because it is very much possible. And I did the cleanse, which just meant I avoided all sugar and processed food, and I felt wonderful, and it wasn't that hard. But the moment I stopped, and granted, I got confused. Of course, there's gluten in beer, but but the moment I stop and then I'm not cooking the food that's out there, it's hard to eat healthy, and
it's hard to eat
that's
healthy.
Unwise right. As a society to have.
Well, it's like anything. The more we take control over our own situation, the more control we have, right? And so part of it is just deciding that this is important enough that we want to really start figuring out how to be in control of what we put in our bodies. And as long as we're, you know, and again, it is the food system makes really unhealthy food really cheap. And so it's hard to get around that. But a person can feed themselves well without having to spend a lot of money. It takes more time. And so we have to, again, we have to value that and recognize that it's a long-term investment in our health.
And there are tricks to that. So I'm gonna leave on that because okay. We don't have time. Like legumes and grains, you make some.
You cook a huge pot, you put a bunch in the freezer, and you have beans for weeks.
Right, exactly. So last minute, anything else you'd like to say?
No, I mean, I appreciate you asking. I'm really excited about the opportunity to teach at Red Leaf Kitchen and certainly just generally the growing awareness around food as, I like to say food as preventative healthcare or food as health as opposed to food as medicine, but however you say it, the important role that food plays in our health.
Yeah, and I know one of the things is there's also so many emotional issues, and one of the things I found is actually allowing for spaciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, allowing my gut to not be full and feeling that like that almost that craving and how that's connected also to my mind wants to be full and just trying to offer spaciousness.
That's a really important point, and that goes back to kind of listening to your body and understanding what is making sense to you as a whole person, right? Body, mind, and everything else.
What's making sense to me as a whole person? Wouldn't that be nice? I might go out with some Willy Wonka music. I don't know. But I appreciate your time, Jenny Breen, a chef, culinary nutritionist, and educator. And your website again, if people want to get some great free recipes. And
TransformingTheTable.com. Feel to me through the as well.
TransformingTheTable.com. Well, I thank you so much, Jenny, and I thank you for listening, and have an awesome week.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Anything you want to do.